Call your attention this evening to the Old Testament. I want you to go to Jeremiah 16. Jeremiah 16. If you're taking notes, the title of the message tonight is The Second Exodus. The Second Exodus. Now, most of us understand when we say Exodus, what's the first thing that pops in your mind? You think Moses. I commented on Charlton Heston this morning. We think about that. But there's going to come a time, biblically, it is already past now, when there is a second Exodus, and we're going to look at that this evening. Now, I believe that God sets up and takes down nations. I think that we learn that from the book of Daniel. The heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. I think that sometimes we get so anxious internally whenever we see things that are happening around us. And I'm just as guilty as you are. You know, when you hear about things that, you know, that cause you much angst. Saw something just yesterday that, to be honest with you, it bothered me greatly. In Dearborn, Michigan right now, which is basically a hot spot for Mohammedism, Islamic teaching, everything about Dearborn now is Islamic. They have call to prayers where that the speakers blare. Well, now they have bought police cars or police look-alike cars, and it has M, like PD, on it for Muslim Police Department. And they don't carry guns yet, but they dress like cops. They drive cars that look like police cars. And they're saying they're just basically patrolling the streets of Dearborn to make sure that people are compliant with Sharia. That kind of stuff bothers me. But it didn't take God by surprise. I believe that if the Lord wanted to stop it, he could stop it without speaking a word or with speaking a word, ever what he chose to do. And so I believe that circumstances that we find ourselves in, I believe that we can safely trust that God is in control. How many of you know the date that Israel became a nation? Okay, I heard some whispering. Not 43. 1948, all right? What took place in 1947? You say, previous year? Yeah, that's right. But after World War II, something began to happen. You know what? The Nazi soldiers that were not tried for war crimes, you know where they went? They went home. But the Jews didn't have a home anymore. And so they began to put them not in a death camp, but they put them in another camp, and it was called a DP, a displaced persons camp. And that's where the Jewish people lived until they could try to get back to a safe place. Now, many of them landed in the United States. Right now in New York City, there is a tremendous, it's the second, outside of Israel, it is the second largest population of Jewish people in the world. They're in New York City. That's one of the things that causes concern because of the recent election of Bandami. But in that 47 year, the ones that couldn't get to the United States or couldn't get to Canada or some other place, some of them even went as far as Australia. Many of those people were put in these camps And so they were wanting to go really home. When you think about home for the Jewish people, we all think Israel. That's what we think. Now, it was called Palestine at that time. It had been called Palestine since the time of a Roman emperor. I think it might have been Hadrian. Don't hold me to that. But there was a Roman emperor that was so aggravated with the Jews that he changed the name of the place on all of the official maps, and it was transferred from Israel to Palestine, much like our president changed the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. I don't know if that's going to last. I've got a sweatshirt and I've got a t-shirt. Bought them when we were on vacation this past summer. It says Gulf of America. Already got grease on the sweatshirt. And so they changed the name, but historically it's always been Israel. 3,000 years it's been Israel. And so you have these folks and they want to get there, but in 1947 the British controlled it. And what were they doing? They were only allowing about 7,500 people a year, according to their documents. I think it was called the white paper that they submitted to the UN. 7,500 out of millions. The people in Israel, the Jewish people that were already there, they wanted their kindred to come. They began to raise money, and they bought an old ship called the Chesapeake Bay. And the Chesapeake Bay was packed. There was 4,500 people on that boat. It left a port in France, and it was headed toward Israel. But as it got out into international waters, it wasn't long before there were six British battleships that pulled along beside of the Chesapeake. And they just shattered them all the way until they got 12 miles off the coast of Israel. And that's when they began to squeeze and they began to try to board, and the Jews that were on the Chesapeake began to fight back with their hands and whatever was there. And then the British opened fire on them. Killed three, wounded hundreds. They began to telegraph what was happening to the people that were already in Tel Aviv, and they began to put it out over the radio airwaves. The threat from one of the British officers was, you either stop and turn around or we sink you. They stopped because they had already lost three and hundreds more were wounded from the shooting that had been laid upon them. They turned and they went back to France. One reporter said that it was as though there were dogs that had been placed in a dog pound. The people were still emaciated from what had happened to them years before in those German Nazi camps. Finally, France said, you got to leave here. And they went to Germany. At the time that that happened, there was a novelist in America. Man's name is Leon Iris. Anybody ever heard of Leon? I have his book. Brother Bill Kirkland, who is one of our fine men, he and Miss Ellen, they come almost every Sunday in the mornings. He gave me this book. He is a learned man, and he loves for me to get books. He's the one that I got the book about the Apostle Paul when he was an ugly baby. He's the one that gave me the book about Luke, the beloved physician. And he also gave me this book by Leon Iris on the Exodus. But it was not the Exodus of Moses. It was the Exodus of 1947. When those 4,500 people left France and they began to head toward Israel, they renamed the Chesapeake, and it was Exodus 1947. They never made it. The next year, May the 14th of 48, because of external pressure that was brought about by that book by Leon Iris, that is why the British gave them permission and they withdrew and let Israel become a nation. It wasn't because of benevolence. It was because of world pressure that had been put on them by that novel by Leon. And so when I think about the Exodus, for years I just thought of one. But what is the Exodus? An Exodus is leaving one place and you're going to a destination. Can I tell you that I think that biblically there's probably three? I know there was the one that happened during the time of Moses. There's going to be a second one that I'm going to tell you about if I ever get to it. And then there'll be a third one that'll take place in the time in which we live. And so I want us to look at Jeremiah 16 tonight. And I want us to see three things. The first thing I want you to see is I want you to see some strange conduct. Now, sometimes we're accused of being different. I don't have a problem with that. Peter calls us a peculiar people. I've been known to be peculiar. My wife and kids think I'm peculiar, and they're probably right. But Jeremiah, he had to do some things that, I'll be honest with you, it would have been hard to do. So we see some forbidden things for this prophet of God. I want you to look with me at verse 2 of chapter 16. Now, after the word of the Lord has come to him, this is what God told him. Thou shalt not take thee a wife. That'd be hard. We used to have a guy in the church years ago, married several times. He told Brother Don one time, he said, I'm going to tell you right now, I got to have a wife. Neither shalt thou have sons or daughters in this place. So Jeremiah, the first thing you're not going to be able to do, you're not going to be able to marry. That's a hard thing. Now, there's some people and they are able to go through life without being married, but most people have those biological needs to want to be married. Sometimes God gives victory over those desires, and being a single person, that's fine. We've had people like that in this church over the last 47 years. And so he was not to marry. Look with me at verse 5. And in verse 5 he says, For thus saith the Lord, Enter not into the home of mourning, neither go to lament nor bemoan them. So in other words, here you are, you're a preacher. You're a prophet of God. You can't get married. And now when somebody dies, you can't go to the family. One of the things that I told a group of young men the other night, I took them down to the funeral home here in Loganville. Brother Jenkins opened it up and walked us through, and we gave them a tour. And I said, you will spend a lot of time in places just like this. If you're in the ministry, you're going to spend a lot of time in places like this. You need to know what you're supposed to do here. One of the great responsibilities of a pastor is to try to comfort those that have been afflicted by the death angel. God willing, I'll share some scriptures tomorrow at the graveside for Miss Diane. But that is an important thing for a preacher to do. Jeremiah is not allowed to do that. Now, in these ancient times, it's almost like a throwback to small towns in the South. When somebody dies in Southeast Georgia, everybody shows up. When they show up, they may show up with potato salad. They might show up with a pie. They might show up with, a basket full of chicken. they're going to show up and they're bringing something with them, and they just want you to know that they love you. Sometimes they even come and they'll just sit there at the funeral home. Back years ago when they used to have the bodies in the home, they would come to the home and sit in the home. And they mourn. And that is a common thing that we are supposed to do with one another. But Jeremiah is not allowed to do that. Not only that, look with me at verse 8. In verse 8, he is not allowed to go into the house of feasting. So in other words, he can't mingle with other people. One preacher used the outline, he was forbidden to marry, he was forbidden to mourn, and he was forbidden to mingle. And that's true. He was forbidden from all of those things. Now, why is that? Because there are times when you get joy from being married, you bring joy and comfort to those that are bereaved, and you enjoy fellowship with each other in festive times. All of those things speak of the good things that can come our way, even in bad times. But he is not allowed to let these people experience this. The reason is because Jeremiah is a weeping prophet. I don't doubt that at all. I mean, what kind of preacher doesn't want to help people when they're hurting? A hireling. What kind of man doesn't want to be married? Crazy man. What kind of Christian doesn't want to mingle with other Christians? Backslidden. I mean, you think about all of those things, and we are blessed by that in our time. But if God really wanted to cause us to have some pain because of our sin, he could do it that way. If he told us not to marry, which is what Paul told Timothy, he said, there's going to be people come along and they're going to forbid people from marrying. Well, how agonizing would that be? That'd be awful. And so you have some strange conduct that the preacher is having to live by. But let me give you a second thing. My time's getting away from me. I want you to see some stalkers that are circling. Look with me, same chapter, look at verse 16. It says, behold, I will send for many fishers. The fishers there is a fisherman. All right. About a month and a half ago, we had five or six of us that went down to Savannah, went fishing, and caught some nice sea trout. I mean, it was fun. It was fun. Well, here you've got these fishermen that are going to be called by the Lord, and they shall fish for them. Who's the them? Israel. Now, when is Jeremiah's time of prophecy? Well, he is about, I don't know, 50, 60 years maybe before the captivity of Babylon. But the fishing he's talking about are the Babylonians that are coming. And he says, and they, the Babylonians, shall fish them. We would say, fish for them. In other words, they are going to be throwing their lines out. I got another one. I got another one. And they're going to be reeling them in, and they're going to be hauling them off into captivity. They're going to take that catch, and they're going to take it home with them. You keep reading, and it says, and after will I send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill and out of the holes of the rocks. In other words, you've got these people, and they are stalking these Jews during this time. Now, the land of Judah has already been conquered, with the exception of the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem has been protected, but Israel was gone 150 years, the ones up north. 150 years later, Judah begins to have issues, and only Jerusalem is what's left, but that is about to fall, according to the prophecies of Jeremiah. And so, there are fishers. There's no escaping. You can't get in a boat or some type of little dinghy and begin to paddle and get away. They're going to catch you. You can't flee into a mountain and try to hide. They're going to catch you. And so we know from history that that is exactly true. Three different times the Babylonians came against Judah. They came in 605. You remember the story of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Those boys, along with many, many others, were taken into captivity in 605. There was a second invasion that came out of the north. That came from Babylon, and that was in 597 BC. So you had about 11 years after that first one, and now you've got a second one. But there will be a third one in, I said 587, but it's actually 605 and then 597, which I'm doing my math backwards, so I'm thinking that's about 8 years, all right? And then the last one was 586. Three. Every one of those brought more and more and more destruction. And finally, you remember the story in Daniel when Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, Belshazzar, he sent to get the vessels from the temple, and they would begin to drink wine in those vessels, and that's when the handwriting was on the wall. Those vessels were taken in 586. And so you have these stalkers, and they are coming. Why are they coming? Because the people of Judah broke the first commandment. No other gods before me. God takes that kind of stuff seriously. And you and I, we need to make sure we understand that the Lord that gave this word to Jeremiah is the same Lord that is on the throne today. And so we see a strange conduct from the preacher. We see stalkers. And the third thing that I want you to see, beginning in verse 14, is I want you to see that salvation will arrive. Now, it's going to take some time. Do you remember the years that Jeremiah prophesied that they would be in captivity? He prophesied it that they would be in captivity 70 years. That's exactly what happened. You had the Persians under a man named Cyrus. And these Persians, they became the big boys on the block. Daniel had prophesied that way back in his book in chapter 2. He began to talk about the gold head was Babylon and the silver chest was Persia. And there were two parts, had two arms. You had the Medes and you had the Persians. And ultimately, the Persians made everybody subservient, and that included the Medes. They all came under one heading. And so you've got the second exodus that has arrived here. And I want you to look with me at verse 15. But, now, did we already read... I don't know if, did we read the first, get my glasses on here. Well, let me read why. Let's start back in verse 12, all right? This is why God brought them under judgment. You have done worse than your fathers. You know something that we parents need to learn, what you do in moderation, your kids will do in abundance. That's a truth that has been around a long time. What we do in moderation, oh, I'll just sin a little bit. Your kids may sin a lot, all right? You've done worse than your fathers, for behold, you walk everyone after the imagination of his evil heart. Is that not what Romans 1 says when I preached about neither were they thankful the other day? That they may not hearken unto me, therefore I will cast you out of this land into a land that you know not. You remember the psalm said, how can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? We hanged our harps on the willow trees. That's because they were in Babylon. They didn't want to sing. They were in a strange land. And so he says, I'm going to cast you out, and there shall you serve other gods day and night, where I will not show you favor. You say, Well, they were thinking about the Lord, yeah, but they were under a slave master in Babylon. And Babylon didn't worship Jehovah. They worshiped Baal, B-E-L, or Marduk, M-A-R-D-U-K. They worshiped other gods, and they would give those other gods credit for anything that they had done, not realizing that God himself was using them to bring judgment on his own people. And so you have these people that are serving other gods. They're slaves in those temples of those godless pagan deities. Verse 14, therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that it shall no more be said. Now, this is something that I find fascinating. The Lord that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Notice Egypt. All right? Now, that's important. When you think of Exodus, the one that you think of most often is Egypt. Again, the Ten Commandments, the movie. That's what you think about. But Jeremiah is told by the Lord that there is going to be a day when I will not be known as that God. Keep reading. But the Lord liveth that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north. Egypt is south. If you take a map and you look at the land of Israel and you see Egypt, you don't see it out here. You see it down there. So here, he's going to be known as the one that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all of the lands whither he had driven them. And I will bring them again into the land that I gave unto their fathers. In other words, I will send them back into that land that I have driven them into because of their sin. And so we see that God wants to be known as the one that brought them out of the north and no longer out of the one that came from the south, aka Egypt. You say, why is that? I don't know the mind of the Lord. The only thing I can speculate on is that this is maybe a greater thing. You think about this. Is it a greater thing for you to round up people that are all in one place? Or is it a harder thing to round up those that are scattered from Dan to Beersheba? Now let me ask you this. If you had chickens like I do, is it easier for you to deal with them inside of a pen? Or is it easier to deal when they're free range and going wherever they want to? Inside the pen. Debbie and I got to noticing a few months ago, I don't understand it, we're getting like 1-2 eggs a day. Thinking, are these older chickens, are the girls just wearing out? I mean, is it time to process them? Put them in freezer camp? Is it time for that? And I told her, I said, I think that these things are laying somewhere else. And so I looked. I mean, I crawled down on my big old belly and I got in, looked under the deck. Nothing. I mean, I went around back. I'm looking under tractors and farm implements and all of that. Nothing. And the other day, I was trying to get leaves out of a pool. By the way, don't get a pool. Won't ever have another one if I ever get rid of this house. I won't ever have another pool. And all of a sudden, I'm looking over by a little raised bed where Deb had grown some herbs. And it had grown up and it was just green and it was just a little canopy type thing. And all of a sudden, all of those things have died back, and I'm looking, and there's like 15 eggs right there in that container. And I'm going, there's your dinner. That's your dinner right there. You say, did you eat those eggs? Not a chance. Who knows how long them jokers been there? So I collected them all. I went over and I just threw them one by one and broke them. You'd be surprised how much cannibalism goes on in the chicken business. All right, they like them eggs. And so you've got these people and they are scattered. They're scattered all over the place. And God begins to put something in their heart, and then all of a sudden, the Babylonians are conquered. In one night, when the writing's on the wall, the Euphrates River is diverted way upstream, the level of the water begins to drop, and it gets, according to historical references, it gets to be thigh high, where that you can walk in the water. And they walked right under the wall. They opened up those huge brass gates, and Babylon was conquered in one night, and the Persians were king of the hill. And 150 years before the Persians took over, God said there will be a man, Isaiah said this, there will be a man, his name will be called Cyrus. And Cyrus, who was the Persian king, 150 years after he's named, said, hey, you guys go home. And that is the second Exodus. So what does the Lord say? Verse 15, we'll get there now. And he says, I will bring them again into the land that I gave unto their fathers. Now, do you remember that covenant? Somebody call his name. Abrahamic covenant. Abraham, way back in Genesis 12, he was the one that God said, every place that the sole of your foot walks, I'm going to give it to you. And so all of the land of Israel is going to be in play here. And they are going to be able to go back to that very land. Now, I was reading about this week. There is an archaeological find. It is called the Cyrus Cone. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's a secular source. But on this cone, which I'm assuming is probably about 3 feet long and about that big around, in what is language is called cuneiform. And in that language that is engraved on this stone, on this cylindrical stone, is the story about how that Cyrus gave permission for the Jews to go home. They didn't have to, but they did. And so we see that God is going to take them from the nations. But there's a second thing. Look with me at verse 19 through 21. Not only is he going to take the Jews from those Gentile nations, but he's going to make sure that those that are in the Gentile nations, they will have salvation if they want it. Now, I told you this morning that when they left in that first Exodus, there was a mixed multitude that followed behind them. Well, here it says this. O Lord, my strength and my fortress and my refuge in the day of affliction, the Gentiles shall come unto thee from the ends of the earth. So the Gentiles are coming and shall say, surely our fathers have inherited lies, vanity, and things wherein there is no profit. Verse 20. Shall a man make gods unto himself, and they are no gods? You can carve that totem pole if you want to, but that's no god. That's just a piece of wood that you've carved on. You've whittled it a little bit. Verse 21. Therefore, behold, I will this once cause them to know. I will cause them to know mine hand and my might, and they shall know that my name is the Lord. Or you see it's capitalized there, Yahweh. And so you have the Gentiles that are even going to want to get on board. Now, can I tell you this? That you and I, we don't live like Jeremiah in a time of no marriage. We don't live in a time when we can't mourn with each other. We don't live in a time when we can't be happy around each other. But these people could not at one time. But ultimately, after they had been punished enough, God gave them mercy. He gave them something that they did not deserve, exactly the same way that he gives us what we don't deserve. Grace is God's riches at Christ's expense. He pays for it. Mercy is withholding the punishment that we deserve. And grace has given us something we don't deserve. And so, I want you to look with me at one final verse and we'll be done. Romans 12, verse 15. This is for us today. Romans 12, verse 15. Rejoice with them that do rejoice. It's only been a few weeks ago that Austin and Rachel got married. It's only been maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago when Levi and Hope got married. Glorious times, happy times, joyous times. Dr. Hudson used to say, I've never seen an unhappy marriage. It's the living together that's tough. And I think that's true. I don't think I've ever been to a wedding that did not have a bunch of smiles at it. Jeremiah could not even go to a place like that, and he was forbidden from even taking a wife for himself. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. When our brothers and sisters in Christ are going through deep water, what do? We come along beside of them. We try to give them what they need in their time of need, and we certainly pray for them often. We pray for them. Why? Because the Lord's been good to us. Did he not call us unto himself? Did he not save we Gentiles? Does Romans 11 not tell us that we were the wild olive branches that were grafted in? Oh, it certainly did. And I thank God for that grafting. And I don't ever want to get to the point to where I go, well, you know, we're special. We're the church. Yeah, we are special. We are. But let's not disparage the other people of God. Because Romans says that if God didn't spare the natural branches, what about the wild? In other words, we were grafted in. We didn't grow there naturally. We were put there by God's marvelous grace. And so let's make sure that we keep the Lord as our God. Let's make sure that this second Exodus. Now, I told you that I think there's three. In 1948, now this is in like 535 BC, in that range. But in 1948, the date that we alluded to at the very beginning of the message, Israel became a nation. And that valley of dry bones began to rattle. And it began to come together, and all of the bones came together, and the sinew and the muscles and the flesh began to come together. And in 1948, they flew their flag for the first time in thousands of years. There are people that are going back to Jerusalem and Israel today by the thousands. Why do you think Israel is involved in what is called annexing? They got to have a place for these people to live. I mean, everybody don't have 40 acres and a mule. All right, it's not that big a place. I mean, this place is about the size of the state of New Jersey. And when you're putting 7, 8, 9, 10 million people there, it gets tight. And there's going to come a time when all of the people are going to come out of those nations, and Israel is going to ultimately follow the Lord. Now, she's going to be fished. She's going to be hunted during the tribulation period. Don't you remember how that Satan, the dragon, has that flood that comes out of her mouth or out of his mouth and goes after her? And all of a sudden, God has to miraculously let the earth open up to take the water. And then you remember in Matthew, flee to the mountains, pray that your flight not be in the wintertime, nor when you're with child. All of those things, they're going to be fishing for those Jews and hunting for those Jews during that tribulation. But one of these days, the salvation of the Lord is going to magnify itself one more time at the Battle of Armageddon. So I think there's at least three exoduses.